Good. How are you? Where are you? Oh, are you guys? Are you guys at a hotel?
We're at a hotel. Garrett is on a work trip in Vegas, and he's been traveling so much for work that he was like, "Oh, do you want to come with me?" And I was like, "Okay, do I want to stay isolated at home and do my routine, or do I want to be isolated in a hotel and do my routine?" And I'm happy that I'm here. I'm happy that we're spending this time together. But I went, there's a Starbucks in the hotel, and I went to get a coffee in the morning, and the amount of people that are here and the amount of those people who are not wearing masks and the amount of those people that almost shoulder checked me was so jarring after months of being at home and being so careful. So my anxiety is a little bit of a, like, at a high level, and I'm going to try to mitigate that by not emerging from the room, but it's a nice room. You can see it on the
Yeah. Room. Yeah. It looks real fancy. That's what I was like, oh, where are you at, girl?
I know. That's why I was like, oh yeah, I know what hotel you're going to. Like, it's not just going to be like a Holiday Inn Express, which no hate on a Holiday Inn Express, but this is like a 5-star resort. So I was like, yeah, I guess I could come with you. But we drove from where we live in Northern California to Vegas yesterday. It took us 10 hours. And he was hauling some things for his work to bring here because they're going to do some sort of demo or whatever. And so we were in this long ass, we were in a huge pickup truck and this long ass trailer. And I'm not one to complain about, well, no, I am one to complain about a lot of things, if I'm being honest, but I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth if I get a free trip to stay at a nice hotel.
Yeah.
In Vegas. Like, I'm not going to complain. But the trip here was 10 hours sitting in a truck, a pickup truck that their entire company and their entire industry is like very, very American bro. And so I get in the truck and there is just like a good quarter of an inch of particles just coating the interior of the truck. What they are, I don't know. But the funny thing is, every time we would pull over for snacks, I would get like a bag of Skittles or a bag of M&M's. And whenever I would drop one, we just had this running joke like, oh, it's just part of the car now.
Yeah.
It's just part of the car now. Don't bother. Because if you go down there looking for it, you're going to end up finding like a Fern Gully-esque village.
Yeah, you're going to find something you don't want to know about. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely forbidden for us. You don't, you don't even want to bother with it at that point.
Precisely. So that was my trip. But ultimately, it was fun. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very sleepy.
Okay.
But I think that's to be expected because of daylight savings time. So is we lost.
Is that today? Did it happen already?
Yeah, it already happened. So we jumped, lost an hour of sleep, which I like with my new job, I've just been trying to readjust my sleep schedule because I have to be at work by 7, which, you know, I'm fortunate I get to work from home. So I don't have
or
to
that
commute.
You have a job.
Yeah. Also, I have a job. But I'm not, I so badly want to be a morning person, but I'm not like a 5 a.m. morning person. Like in terms of waking up, I'm like 8 a.m., 7:30. Like that's when I like to wake up. But having to wake up at like 5:30 or so. So during the week I was waking up at 5:30 and then the weekend I was like, oh, I can sleep in. And now I'm like, wait, no, now your body is all wonky. So I'm trying to figure out the sweet spot of like waking up early for work during the week and then sleeping a little bit more during the weekend, but not so much that I turn into a zombie.
I have a morsel of advice should you want it.
Go on.
I used to work for an East Coast based company.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, very specific hours that I wanted to plug in when they were all at their peak. And my suggestion is if you have control over your schedule or you're able to get control over your schedule, schedule your meetings for later in the day for you. Granted, there is like basically after lunchtime, East Coast time. So if you schedule your meetings for 1 East Coast, it'll be like 10 a.m. your time. So that way you wake up, you have a few hours to not talk to anybody, to caffeinate, to like plan out your day, get the high priority things done. And then you're ready to emerge and talk to people. I find that that's what works for me. I need a solid 3-4 hours in the morning where I'm just churning through what I need to get done. And then I'm like, okay, I'm ready to socialize. And then if the rest of my day was meetings, I was fine with that because I already had gotten all of my work done and I just needed this other piece.
Yeah. So
if you can do that, I highly recommend it.
Cool. I'm trying to figure out like what the structure is. So it is, and it's something I need to talk to my boss about of like, how much can I push back when people on, you know, Central Standard Time or scheduling a meeting that's 8:30 their time, but it's 6:30 my time. And I have my office hours set from like 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to 4 p.m. or whatever it is. So to like avoid that from happening, but it's happened twice now, which is like, it's also, it's a weird thing. Cause I'm like, okay, well like they just need help getting stuff cleaned up and then this will change in the next few months. Like this will not be forever, but I also don't want to make it a habit of like, oh yeah, I can pop something on her schedule at 6:30 in the morning. Like,
yeah. Set those boundaries early.
Yeah. Like I'm not a person that early in the day. I personally don't even like having meetings before 9 a.m. So it's this weird thing. So I have to talk to him about it tomorrow and be like, hey, like, can I decline meetings when people do that? Or can I at least be like, hey, can you schedule this for like another, like an hour from this time? Cause I'll actually be online. So there's that, which is frustrating. Cause I used to get mad at my old job when people were like, a meeting at 8 a.m. I was like, 8 a.m. How dare you? And I'm like, 6:30 in the morning, y'all. What? No.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things of like setting boundaries and setting expectations, because if we want to make a charitable assumption to those people, like they may not have context or they may not even have the awareness that like, oh, you're in a different time zone. And I think setting those boundaries is so important.
Yeah. And I think I'm the first person to join the company that is based on the West Coast. So they're not used to having to think about that. They're used to everybody else being in New York. They're in Minnesota. So everybody is an hour after them. So I think I just need to remind them like, hey, it is 2 hours earlier here. I want to die. So I'm sure it'll be fun tomorrow when I have that meeting and it's like pitch black where I'm at because the sun isn't rising until 7 a.m. now. So I can just be like, yeah, it's 6:30. Don't do this to me ever again. Thank you.
Do you know, I was so inspired by our 2 episodes with Chanel that I pulled a card. I pulled a tarot card. Because I have a deck. I never really knew how to use it. And it, like I have the guidebook that goes with it. And it's like, okay, pull this card and put it here. Put it in the formations. And, but when she did it and she just did like, you just think of a question. You put your energy into the question. You put it into the cards. And then you just shuffle really quick. And whatever jumps out, like that's the card. So I did that. And my question that I asked was, you know, how is today's episode gonna go? And I was just like shuffling super quick and then a card jumped out and it was the 4 of Pentacles. Pentacles, not tentacles, not testicles, pentacles. And when my diction is not, I've started doing exercises to improve my podcast diction, but we're not there yet. Anyway, 4 of Pentacles, and I looked up what it means and it essentially means like wealth, like we are moving to a place of like hopefully monetizing the podcast. So that being said, please head to our Patreon, patreon.com/thepeonypodcast. You can support the show. You can get some extra little features. We have some extra footage and some extra audio content coming from the past two episodes that's going to go up tomorrow or Tuesday. So we're recording this on Sunday. I have no idea what time is anymore. I'm realizing. But anyway, it'll be there. Just go on Patreon. It's super fun. It's amazing. You get to support us because we don't have ads, and we don't have ads because we love you guys and we just want to be here for you guys. So please support us. Thank you.
Yeah. And shout out to you, Julia, because like all of this, like the Instagram, the Patreon, the website, like Julia's done all of it. I just kind of bumble in and I'm like, what's up? And
you have been getting so much viral content out in the Twittersphere.
Okay, like two tweets, both Bachelor related. Who knew? Yep. I've been on that hell site Twitter for over 10 years, like literally since the beginning of it, because I like followed a band that I was really into or something. I think the most like a personal tweet has ever gotten is maybe like 6 retweets. For whatever reason, Bachelor content is my niche and it's wild. I'm just like, what?
Yep. Twitter is rolling out a beta of being able to monetize tweets. So if we had that and your 6,500 likes of that one tweet.
Good Lord. Yeah, I was like, what the F? I just kept watching the numbers. I was like, all right, I guess this is funny.
I know, which we are going to do an episode where we talk about the season now that it's heading to an end and what they got right and the many, 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 many things that they got wrong.
Yes, yes. And I haven't been doing the live tweets of it just because of work and traveling and stuff, so I still need to get caught up, but I'm hoping to... Whether I'm caught up or not, I'm gonna live tweet the finale tomorrow night. So stay tuned for that. I have no idea where we're at, but I'm excited to see what happens.
I'm so excited.
What a wild season. What a wild season.
But also like not.
Yeah. I think
it's only wild because the things that have happened are so in line with the franchise, but so misaligned with the current cultural and political climate.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about. We'll talk about it on the episode, but basically like ABC, call me, you know, I would set fire to the rain to remix the Bachelor franchise.
Which would be dope. Yeah. It's also interesting too, because I feel like a lot of the really wild stuff of the season was behind the scenes or like not the show when, you know, Chris Harrison, like just being tone deaf as hell, everything that came out about Rachel and about certain contestants, like,
which isn't anything new.
Yeah. It's not anything new, but given given the current climate that we're in, it's just like, no, and there's no reason. That's the other thing. Like it's so easy to stalk people on social media and on the internet. Like you need to be doing better background checks on potential contestants. Like do your research, man. It's not that hard.
Are you kidding me? Literally just give a girl in college or in high school an internship to do the research for you, because there is nothing that we are not excellent at than being fucking internet detectives. Are you kidding me? Anytime anyone in our friend group starts to date someone new, we find out all of his cousins, all of his aunts. We find out who in the family is what allegiant to what political party. We find out, we get everything. And then we send our friend off on the first or second date with this dossier. And this guy is just like, so like my Aunt Mary lives in Vermont. And she's like, that's so interesting. But in her head, she's like, oh, I know. She like is a total like female entrepreneur with her like maple syrup like business. Like we know how to do this. So I mean, hello.
Yeah. It's, and I will say, like, I, for a while, I was like, oh, that's so weird that we do that. Cause I do it too. I think all women do. And then I was like, because I'm into true crime, I was like, no, we fucking do it to make sure we're not going to wind up like in a shitty situation. Like, totally makes sense. Yeah. I am going to stalk you. And if I can't find you on social media, that's a red flag. Like,
oh, it's a huge red flag.
Yeah.
Huge red flag.
Where are you?
Like,
excuse me?
Yeah, anyway, exactly. Exactly. And wondering. I think that is something that we as women have to think about all the time. And that's the thing is, like, with the internet, like, we're no longer just telling you, hey, I'm going on a date. This is where we're going. Call me at this time. Yep. Check in on me. Text me at this. Like, we're also saying, like, hey, I did the research on this guy. Like, this is where he lives. This is where he went to, like, all of the things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, these are the locations that if anything happens, like, talk to this person, go to this location. Like, we do research to preemptively protect ourselves, but then we also do research on if we do get kidnapped and killed, where our friends and family can go or where the police can go to, like, for it not to be a cold case, which is just so, on the one hand, chilling, but on the other hand, like, it's become such a normal occurrence and activity in so many women's lives that I feel like I can talk about it nonchalantly at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's scary how nonchalantly I can talk about it, because it's just what we have needed to do for so long.
Yeah.
To survive.
Yeah. The fact that we say things like, hey, text me when you get home. Mm-hmm. Like, and again, it's to protect ourselves, but the fact that we say it and do it without, like, we don't even think twice about saying that anymore. No. Like, it's an, it's an automatic reaction now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's, we've been seeing an uptick on social media with what has happened in the UK with Sarah Everard. I'm sorry if I mispronounce. I'm terrible with pronunciations, but
I believe that's
where
right.
where she did all the right things.
Yeah.
She texted people. She wore shoes so that she can, like, she wore clothes
she
and shoes
run.
That she could run. She, like, did all of the necessary things. She had her location tracking on, and she still disappeared, and she still died. And people are, like, up in arms about this. Like, this is happening. Awareness, awareness. And I'm like, this is happening. And it's more than just this case that got picked up in the media. This happens so frequently. And even when it's not actually happening, we, our whole lives are trained from a very, very early age. This is how not to draw attention to yourself from the wrong kind of people. This is how, and the wrong kind of people are literally just men. This is how not to dress if you don't want to be taken advantage of. This is how not to behave. And it's such a fucked up construct, because on the one hand, we're told behave, like, be nice and don't be aggressive and don't be direct and don't be a bitch. Like, be a nice girl. And on the other hand, it's like, oh, well, like, you gave off the wrong vibe. So of course you were a victim. And so it's this weird, like, purgatory of, you can be nice, you can't be too nice where people take advantage of you. And, like, you have to set your boundaries, but you can't be a bitch. And It just loops back to the consistent objectifying of women. And I'm fucking done. I'm fucking done.
And the consistent, like, victim blaming that goes along with it. Like, there's that quote that's essentially, like, when we talk about crimes about women or crimes against women, look at the phrasing, like, it's very passive, crimes against women versus crimes committed by men. Like, it, you know.
Should we talk about not all men? Should we talk about how it's a hashtag that's trending?
I don't give a fuck if it's not all men. If you're not actively doing something to stop it, it is all men. Like, it, there's that, I can't remember if you posted it or if another friend posted it. There's a comedian who talks about it and I cannot remember his name, but I'll try to find it. And he's like, look, like, yeah, not all men. Have I ever sexually assaulted a woman? No. But did I stop my friend from making troublesome comments and having troublesome behavior that eventually led to him raping one of my female friends? He's like, I didn't do shit. I could have prevented that. I could have stepped in. I could have said something earlier on. And then what wound up happening is he raped a friend, and I will live with that for the rest of my life because I didn't step in to stop anything. I had power in that situation and I didn't use it. So it's like, you may not be the one committing the crime or, creating the action, but if you're not calling your friends out on their bullshit and stepping in when you see that those patterns happening, you're also part of the problem. It's like the same thing with racism, right? Like, I don't want to conflate the two, but just because you think you're not actively participating in it doesn't mean that you are blameless in this situation. Like, you have to take responsibility too, and you have to call that shit out when you see it.
I wonder what the Venn diagram is between people who say all lives matter and not all men. Like, I wonder if it's just a circle.
Probably pretty fucking close to a circle, I would assume.
Here's the thing. And this speaks to the construct of our society. The fact that not men are turned, took an event that was the disappearance and the murder of a woman, and this outcry of women coming forward and sharing their stories and talking about how this is what it's like to grow up being a little girl, growing into a young woman, growing into a woman. Mm-hmm. And the response from mostly men is hashtag not all men. Like, why are you bringing the conversation back to you? This wasn't about you. This was never about you. We're sharing our experiences to give context of what it's like to be a woman in this world. We weren't even talking about you. Yeah. I didn't say like, oh, Patrick is the problem, but all of a sudden Patrick is going on his Instagram like, well, not all men. And I'm like, I wasn't even fucking talking to you. Chill out.
And I think when that, like, that reaction of like, well, not all men, to me, I'm like, okay, but if you're having that visceral of a reaction, you understand that your behavior has contributed to this problem. Like, you know.
Here's what I want. If you listen to this podcast and you are someone that believes not all men, if you are someone who knows people, has people in your life that come back to you and say, well, not all men, here is what I want you to do. I want you, if you are that person, make a list. If you know that person, ask them to make a list of the characteristics that define predatory men versus the safe, quote unquote, safe men, and how we as women would be able to tell the difference between a predatory man and a safe man before the violence happens. You tell me that. You tell me that. And if you give me that checklist, then it's on me. It's on me that I don't have the awareness. Like, oh, I didn't look at the checklist. I don't have the awareness. Like, all the behaviors and the red flags were there. Great. But if you yourself can't tell the fucking difference, how do you expect me to? Obviously, I'm just going to assume. And here's what's going to happen. I either don't assume. I assume that it's not all men and that I should trust all men. And I end up either being harassed, being raped, being killed, whatever.
Yeah.
Or I assume it is all men. So that when you come at me as a man and you show me decent behavior, I'm relieved and I'm alive.
Yeah.
Like, what is the difference? Obviously, there's a better route to take.
Yeah. And it's how about educate yourselves, and like, we should be teaching boys and men to not be predators. Like, just don't be a fucking, like, don't be a fucking rapist, dude. Like, and it also, and then it goes back to, like, especially in Sarah's case, it was a police officer that did it. Like, just another fucking reason to not trust police, like, on top of everything else. And that's the problem too, is it's like, Then you're told like, oh, well, if you don't feel safe, call the police, do this thing, go to people with power. No, because they have power, they think they can get away with it. Yeah. Like anyway.
Any woman who has ever had her car break down on the side of the road knows that a man could pull over and be hostile, knows that the tow truck worker that she calls could pull over and be hostile, knows that the police officer or the sheriff or any other form of law enforcement could pull over and be hostile. There, you assume they won't be. You assume that he's just here to tow the car or change a tire or help, like, be a law enforcement agent. But there are so many instances that that's not the case, where there are men that see it as a this perpetuated bullshit narrative that we're given in all of our entertainment growing up of a damsel in distress needing a guy to save her, and then they end up together at the end. This impacts men, little boys, just as much as it does women, because those little boys then grow up to say, oh, I need to look for a woman that I deem as weak, a woman that needs me to be her prince, and we're going to end up together. And once that narrative implants in your mind, a stronger woman, an outspoken woman, a woman that doesn't need you, a woman that doesn't want to be with you, then becomes the antithesis of what you've been raised to expect to be given in this life.
Yeah. It also then like creates this idea of, oh, well, I helped her or I was nice to her. So I deserve whatever I want from her.
Nope. That's not the case.
No,
that's not the case.
No, you helped me change my tire. Know what? That's it. Get out.
You know what? If women had the ability to act like men in the society, so many more men would have crippling anxiety and erectile dysfunction, because we would call them out on their all of the dicks we would be hypercritical about. Like, let's be honest, your dick and balls, not the best creation in the universe. Whether you believe in creationism, whether you believe in evolution, like a dick and balls, and the fact that you're supposed to be this like strong ass dude, I kick you in the balls and you go down. Now, I'm not trying to hate on men. I'm just saying that societally speaking and culturally speaking, if the roles were reversed, or if, you know, we were given different narratives, because little boys are given the narrative that they have to be hyper masculine as much as women are given narratives that they have to be demure. And like, what would happen if we just stopped, like reversed it or stopped in general?
Yeah. Well, and like toxic masculinity doesn't just hurt women. It also severely hurts men. Like imagine a world where like men are allowed to express their emotions and like feel the full spectrum of being a human being. And they're allowed to talk about that. And they're allowed to cry. And they're allowed to like feel their feelings and pursue careers in softer fields or whatever without criticism. Like it frees you up so much to be more empathetic and be more sensitive. And it's not a negative thing. Like there also like I think it's the suicide rate of men after divorce is incredibly high. And there's a lot of conversation of like, because, or and not just suicide, but a lot of men passing away shortly after losing their female partner or partner in general is generally much higher than it is for women. And part of it is like for a lot of men, they're the person that they can like emotionally put their shit on or like be emotionally vulnerable with is their wife or is their partner. And so when that person is gone, there's no outlet for it. And so it becomes incredibly harmful and detrimental to the mental well-being and the physical health of men. So it's like, it's not just like, I'm not saying like, don't do it for women, do it for yourself, but like deconstructing these gender norms, deconstructing toxic masculinity is beneficial for everybody across the board. Like
We're going to throw out all these buzzwords, and the buzzwords are what trigger people. Hearing toxic masculinity triggers people. Like here, at the end of the day, all we're saying is give people the space and the acceptance to be who they are.
Yeah.
If who they are is offensive to you, then either have that conversation or don't engage with that person. Mm-hmm. Right? Because like there's a difference between someone who, you know, is a misogynist. That's offensive. And someone who kills women. That's mm-hmm. a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm saying like accept people as the, like allow, give people the space to be who they are within a certain, you know, ethical means. But just, and it goes back to this conversation of like, we use these buzzwords and we put people in boxes and we tell people like, if you're not liberal, you're conservative. If you're not Democrat, you're Republican, and all of the connotations. And if you're not a man, you're a woman. And like all of these connotations that go with these labels and these buzzwords. But at the end of the day, allowing a human being to be who they fully are, giving them the safe space to explore that and to be that, you don't have to agree with it. If you don't agree with it, then that's just not a friendship or a relationship in your life that you want to uphold. And that's fine. And if you have the kind of relationship where you can have that conversation where you disagree and it doesn't escalate to a place of, you know, judgment or hatred or violence or anything like that, then that's even better. But ultimately, like, we don't have to get along with everyone. We don't have to agree with everyone. But giving people the freedom and the space to explore who they are and to be that person, that's just a basic human right. And we just don't give people that space.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. I'm excited about this episode because we're talking similar to our Black History Month episode. This is Women's History Month, International Women's History Month. And we thought it would be fun to talk about some women that you may not know about, that the history books may not have taught us about, you know, and kind of talk about their legacy and talk about how they were alive perhaps at a time where the gender divides, societally speaking, were even stronger, but they excelled and they used their strength and their wits and their intellect and their wiles to really get to a place where they themselves were thriving. And so I'm so excited to talk about this and to like swing our conversation back to an empowering point.
Yes. Yes. I'm so fucking pumped.
I'm so excited. Do you want to go first?
First lady up. This one I'm really excited about. Julia messaged me on Instagram post about this woman, and I was like, I've never heard of her before.
Oh yes, yes.
What? Woo, 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 woo. Can we talk about her?
I'm so excited. Yes, all right. I'm so excited.
So first lady up is Martine Rothblatt. Martine was born in October of 1954, Libra baby, October 10th specifically.
I love Libra.
Me too. Both of my ladies are, we jive, you know what I mean? Astrologically, men do it. So Martine is an American lawyer, an author, entrepreneur, and transgender rights advocate. And I'm just gonna start at the beginning. So she was born in Chicago to a Jewish family and raised in San Diego. In 1974, she had an epiphany to connect the world via satellite communications. And I'm just gonna do a very quick rundown because I was like, hi, this is so much. Her education, her resume, her work experience, whatever you want to call it, is absolutely insane. There's a lot. I was like, this will take me. We could do like an entire series on her. But she, one of the first things is that she was hired by a law firm out of college to represent the broadcasting industry. Then she studied astronomy. She launched several satellite communications companies. She's known for her pharmaceutical and medical innovation, which we'll get to in a bit. She discovered that the larger the satellite in space is, the smaller you can make the receiving satellite. So ones on Earth, aka Sirius XM radio. She's one of the original founders of Sirius XM Radio, which is so dope. Also, I love she refers to space as the ocean of the sky, which I was like, that's so beautiful.
That's fucking terrifying. Do you know how scary the ocean is? The primordial critters that are at the very bottom.
And space is so big.
I just started sweating. She is the, she is who, like, I am her, she is me, except here's the thing. I, out of all of my projects that I'm working on and all of the different avenues and all the different branches of my business, I have not been successful yet.
Yes.
So like, that's the thing. She's like, she's doing, you know, astronomy and she's doing medicine and like all these different things, but like monetizing it.
Yeah. So. She's, it is. And it just, it's wild. It's wild. I was like, so
anyone,
goddamn.
Anyone who says like, you have to pick something and stick with it and really drill down. Like, you don't necessarily have to, you just got to follow through with the, whatever you do.
Yeah. And just like, try stuff, you know? In 2016, she helped the world's first electric-powered full-size helicopter take flight. I think it, like, took off for, like, 8 minutes, and then, like, a year later, they got it up to 30 minutes. So it's, like, but, and that's the other thing, too. Like, 8 minutes may not sound like a super long time. It's not. Like, it's a very short span of time. But to know that, like, we are going to this place of, like, I don't know, maybe in like 5 years, like helicopters could be powered by electricity, like, or batteries. What am I saying?
Why are we talking like, about Elon Musk and not talking about Martine?
That's okay. Honestly, when I get to the end of this, I was just like, why are we talking about Elon Musk? Like, who?
I mean, we could be, but like,
cares.
and
he's done great. Like, Let's just say, like, he's done some wild stuff and has really pushed, like, SpaceX has really pushed things forward. The fact that we are not
on the person.
Yeah.
I feel like Elon Musk loves being a celebrity. So yeah. He leans into that lifestyle.
Yeah. I'm just surprised that we, like, do not know Martine the way we know Elon. But so this is, like, one of the not last contribution she's done, but this one I was like, what? In 2018 in Silver Spring, Maryland, Martine inaugurated the world's first net zero office building, Unisphere. So with solar panels, geothermal wells, additional on-site sustainable energy resources, Unisphere operates with a zero carbon footprint. And it's
so
like,
it's possible.
And it's like, I think it's like 200,000 square feet. And then the, you can access like the people working there can see in real time, like how much energy it's producing. And it's pretty dope. Okay. So that's like kind of a very short version of stuff. I'm going to get more into the meat of Martine, and I just want to preface. I will have a quote later on where I will be using Martine's, I don't know if Martine refers to it as their dead name or as her dead name or not, because in the, it's her quote, like saying the quote. So I just want to like preface that. I also want to preface, a lot of this research came from a TED talk that she does. Go watch it. It's amazing. However, the person interviewing her like starts off and is just like, here's a photo of you before you transition. Let's talk about that. And it's like very, what are you doing, sir? Like, bro, I don't know if like Martine is comfortable with that, because I know there are a lot of transgender people who are like, yeah, here's me before I transitioned. Happy to talk about it. Martine seems a little uncomfortable, which is why I'm like, just FYI, if you decide to watch it, it's a little uncomfortable, because it doesn't seem like Martine is very comfortable with it.
We should have more of these I feel like the thing about it is so many of us as like people in society are afraid of saying the wrong thing, that we either don't say anything at all, or like we just police others. Before we're able to really talk about something, we need to talk about how to talk about it. And it's totally fine to approach conversation. And in fact, we should normalize approaching a conversation and saying, I don't have all of the information here. I don't have a lot of the awareness. I am coming from a place of ignorance. There is so much power in saying, I am coming from a place of ignorance. And so much of our egos don't allow us to do that. But when you come to a conversation and say, I'm coming from a place of ignorance, I don't have awareness in this conversation, like, how can I put you at ease? Knowing how to talk about something is what you need to then be able to talk about it and not be in your own head, not be in your ego, or also like not like flop your ego around and be like, yeah, this is what the people want to hear. Let's talk, like, this is you before.
Yeah. And it, like I said, I don't know like what conversation Martine and this interviewer had beforehand.
Yeah.
It's just, we see it happen so frequently with transgender people where especially the interviewer like is just an asshole about it. And so it was just uncomfortable enough where I was like, did you talk about this beforehand? So I just want to preface, like, if you watch it, it's a little rough. And I was like, bro, can you be better at this? However, overall, like once we get past that moment, just listening to Martine speak and her story is so fascinating, and where she is going and the things that she has planned at, like,
her pronouns are she, her.
Yes, her pronouns are she, her. So throughout this, I will only be referring to her as she and her. There's just that one quote, which is a quote from her. And it, I think, kind of like just really exemplifies like how beautiful the relationship with her and her wife is. So here we go. Okay. In the early 1980s, Martine was at a discotheque in Los Angeles when she looked across the room and saw Bina. And it was love at first sight.
Oh, love story. Me, I love too. A discotheque love story.
I know. I also love that it was referred. She called it a discotheque, and I was like, "You mean a club? I don't a dance
no, no,
hall?
No.
Discotheque.
No. Yes.
Yeah. I was like obsessed. So Martine went up to Bina, told her that she saw an aura of energy around her, and then she asked her to dance. Bina also said that she saw an aura of energy around Martine. They then exchanged photos of one another's kids. At the time, they both had a child from a previous relationship. And then they both have said, like, it was absolutely love at first sight. And they've been happily married for over 30 years. Icky.
From a neuroscience standpoint, the emotions that we feel lead to different vibrations, atomically speaking, literally of our atoms. So if I am feeling rageful, my atoms are going to vibrate at a different frequency. If I am feeling happy, my atoms are going to vibrate at a different frequency. And when all of your atoms are vibrating at a certain frequency, it actually, the electromagnetic fields around your body begin to resonate at a different frequency. So when you talk about like, oh, your aura or your vibe, that's literally someone else's electromagnetic field coming into contact with yours and at an atomic neurological level processing, oh, there are waves of rage coming off of this person, or there are waves of happiness coming off of this person. So I want to talk to them. Like, and so when you talk about like passing the vibe check, or like this person has a good energy or a good aura, there is actually like, a scientific, like a quantum mechanics mechanism to how we sense that.
I didn't know that. That's so dope. That's so dope. Obsessed. Well, their vibrations just really meshed.
Pass the
together.
Vibe check. And they're still together, right?
Yes. So they got married in 1982. They had two more children together. So they have four kids. They are still married. Adorable. Bina is in the TED Talk. But j'adore.
I have a question.
Yes.
And I'm coming from a place of ignorance. So please correct me if this is not properly mm-hmm. phrased. Did Bina and Martine get together before Martine transitioned? And do they speak on what that, how that affected their relationship?
They do, and it okay. might make you a little misty-eyed. I don't know. But I'm going to read the quotes that, like, okay, the, okay. the response that Martine's family had to her coming out as transgender. And I was like, yeah, it's beautiful. So I'll talk about that right now. Beautiful segue. Yay! So in 1994, Martine came out as transgender to her family came out as transgender to her family. When she came out to her wife and her four children, she told them, quote, "I felt my soul was always female and as a woman, but I was afraid people would laugh at me if I expressed it. So I always kept it bottled up and just showed my male side." Her family responded, well, this is what Bina told her. Mm-hmm. "I love your soul. Whether the outside is Martin or Martine, it doesn't matter to me. I love your soul."
I just got spirit bumps. Yeah. I got goosies.
Yep. Yeah. I was like, her son told her, "If you become a woman, will you still be my father?" To which Martine said, "Yes, I'll always be your father." Mm-hmm. Which is like a reminder that it doesn't, the sex of that parent figure doesn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. as long as that kind of like emotional support is fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just thought that was really cute. And then this one cracked me up and also like gave me spirit bumps. Martine was saying like her daughter, who was 5 at the time, had like just such a 5-year-old response, which was, "I love my dad and she loves me."
I got it again. I got goosies again.
You're going to get, I'm just going to let you know straight up, like, you're going to get a lot of goosies from both of my ladies that I'm talking about. So that was in 1994 when she came out to her family. They were all very supportive. And then she began her transition. So while she is going through this like personal, this very personal thing, in 1994, the same year, her daughter Genesis was diagnosed with a life-threatening and rare disease called pulmonary arterial hypertension. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find exactly how old Genesis was at the time. They did show a photo, and I would say she was probably like 12 or 13. She was like preteen, early teen, so very young. So this is in 1994. Doctors told Martine and Bina that Genesis would eventually die from this disease because there was no cure or real treatment. And they'd placed Genesis on the lung transplant list. However, they were like, it probably won't happen because available lungs for organ donation are incredibly rare, especially for children. So, and they took Genesis to like top pediatricians, top specialists, like did the thing, and everyone was essentially like, we'll do our best, but eventually she's going to die from it. And Martine was like, yeah, no, fuck you. I'm not taking that as an answer. And she actually like, she began educating herself on pulmonary hypertension. And so essentially what was happening is like, she and Bina were taking shifts between like who was at home with the other kids and who was at the hospital with Genesis. And there was a library on site at the hospital, and Martine would go to the library and she would read medical journals and medical texts about pulmonary hypertension. And she was like, I didn't study biology even in college, so I then had to like go back and forth between like texts for like high school and college students that were explaining like baseline what was happening. And then I would go back to these medical books and then medical journals. And so she educated herself and effectively became an expert on pulmonary hypertension. And she began reaching out to other specialists and, you know, with questions and trying to figure out something to save her daughter, which led to her creating a nonprofit organization and asked for grants in order to to speed along the research to help find a cure. A lot of doctors told her, like, this is great, but, like, just so you know, we are not going to find a cure in time to save your daughter. Then she was informed that there was a, I believe it was a laboratory called the Galaxo Welcome, mm-hmm. which had found a medicine that seemed to have really good results for pulmonary hypertension. So she goes to them mm-hmm. and she just kept wearing them down, but they were not about to like give her the patent for this because she's a satellite communications expert. Mm-hmm. They're like, you're not a doctor. Like, we're not doing this. But eventually she found people who were empathetic to her cause and she was able to gain their trust. And they started working with her and eventually, through like gaining credibility, they were like, okay, we'll give you the patent for it. And she agreed to pay them, I think it was $25,000 for the initial patent and the initial like medicine that they had created. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I'll give you 10% of like what it, you know, if we turn this into a viable medication, I'll give you 10% of the profits from it. So they were like, yeah, sure, great. Here is a Ziploc bag of this like weird white powder. And she's like, wait, what is this? This isn't a medicine. They're like, no. Like, we haven't created the medicine. It's just like chemicals. Also, don't give this to a human. Like, we've only tested it on rats. And she was just like, are you kidding me? Like, and so then she gets a bunch of chemists together. And it was really difficult because like initially, I think the medicine only had, once it was in a state where it could be given to somebody, it only had a half-life of 45 minutes. So like, it's what? Not, yeah, exactly. I was like, what? So the odds were like pretty much stacked against her and this team, but they just kept going. And a year and a half later, after getting the patent, the medication worked. Ooh. It is now known as treprostinil. Apologies. It's sold under the brand names Remodulin, which is for infusion, Ornitram for oral ingestion, and then Triviso for inhalation. So it's in three different forms. Mm-hmm. And since like the mid 90s has been used to treat pulmonary hypertension. And it's not a like cure-all. It is a treatment. But Genesis is now, I believe she's in her 30s. She's still alive. It saved Martine's daughter's life. And it's saved countless lives. And it's like through that process, Martine then created United Therapeutics, which is a company that specializes in rare or orphan disease. Mm-hmm. And Genesis now works at the company and has said that like, I just want to help other people who have rare diseases. I want to like give them hope that they can get better and that there is a solution out there and that they don't have to suffer. So that is sort of United Therapeutics' whole thing. So also while this was happening, one of the big things like with Genesis situation, you know, at one point they were like, oh, a lung transplant. But lung transplants are super rare. So one of the other things that Martine has started looking into, and I can't remember if this is separate from United Therapeutics or not. I forgot the name, but it's this like study of science where you basically genetically modify organs from another species mm-hmm. to then work with humans. So for example, like taking the lungs from a pig and genetically modifying that. So then you can like implant that into a human. It's like xeno.
Is it like stem cell adjacent?
Sort of. It's, I think it's like stem cell adjacent, but it sounds like it's like finding, and I feel like pigs will probably be the most common since they are, yeah, I think they're more genetically similar to humans than most other animals. But yeah, using like that sequencing to then modify it in order to create lungs and hearts in a lab so we could have an unlimited stock of organs for transplants. Mm-hmm. And there is a video of in one of the labs, like watching lungs that have been created in a lab, like take a breath.
Yeah.
Take a few breaths. It's wild. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like how much has kind of like come through with this. So that's just one of the things that she's done. There's also, so since coming out, she's become a vocal advocate for not only transgender rights, but also gender fluidity. She wrote a book titled The Apartheid of Sex, which like essentially boils down to the thesis that there are 7 billion people in the world. And that means that there are 7 billion different ways to express your gender. Just because you have genitals of a male or the genitals of a female, like that doesn't reflect your gender or your sexual identity. Those are just like, it's just like basic anatomy and it's mm-hmm. just a reproductive tract. Like that doesn't define who you are. But society kind of forces you to select one or the other. And again, that's not how gender works. It's very fluid and there's a really wide spectrum. So her book, The Apartheid of Sex, talks about that. Okay. So this is what she's currently working on. There's the TerraSem movement, which is, there's three prongs to it. There's one that's like more based on the concept of TerraSem, which I can't remember exactly what it stands for. There's that. There's then like the project portion of it. And then there's also sort of a religion-based aspect.
What?
TerraSem movement. I believe it was
the movement. The what was for the religion part? Because that, what?
The religion part. Yeah. So I'll get into like how these things kind of all like tangled together. So the TerraSem movement was founded by Martine and her wife, Bina. It's the concept, and like as far as I could kind of break it down to understand it myself, was this idea of creating a mind file and uploading it. So that way your consciousness can live forever. So it's this idea of, it's sort of twofold. There's this idea of, you know, we have this unlimited supply of organs. You can kind of like think of yourself as a car and like replace bits and parts. So that way you can live forever. But then in tandem with that is this idea of like AI and software forever? Is moving at such a rate. Yeah. So that way you could essentially teach teach software to replicate your mind. Mm-hmm. So that way you can upload your consciousness and it can exist forever and you can preserve it forever.
Do you want to live forever is my question.
Oh, do I?
You know, everyone who's listening can also sound off, but like DM us, obviously. But no, I'm talking to you right now. Like, do you want to live forever?
Yeah. I don't know. I think I would want to live for a long time. I don't think forever. Mm-hmm. But I also just like on a, like personally, I like believe in reincarnation. I believe in past lives. So I believe that like, you do live forever, just in different forms. So that's my thing personally. Do I want my brain like uploaded into like what I imagine is a Google Drive? No. Like, there's a lot of nonsense going on up there. But I do think it's like this really beautiful concept of being able to preserve a mind. I also, it just made me think, and I didn't see anything about this in my research, but thinking about like, if your family has a history of Alzheimer's or early onset dementia, mm-hmm. like being able to upload the mind of someone you love. Mm-hmm. So that way you can kind of remember who they were before the disease took hold. I think it's kind of beautiful. I also think it's troublesome too, because it doesn't, I would just imagine personally, like I would then cling to that person mm-hmm. virtually and not spend time with them physically. And so now the grief process is really messy and strange. Like there's so much about it that I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And also, wait, hold on. What would be the psychological impacts if we did the thing? Like there's a lot to unpack with it. And there are a lot of critics who are like, it's not possible.
It could be just in line with like how some people donate their bodies to science after they die. Someone can just like donate the hard drive of their brain after they die.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much like, there's so much, I think there's so much potential for it. And I just think it's really fascinating. So there's like the main, so when I was talking about the like three branches, there's that one. And then there's the one that's like creating projects. So one of the projects that they're working on is like, I think it was called the Anti-Racism Museum, I think. But the idea is creating this virtual museum that walks through, and she has this quote that I was like, yeah, that's perfect. That like race does not exist, but racism does.
Yeah.
And so talking about how through creating this construct of race, we have used that to then oppress people who on like a biological level, there's no difference. If you look at like the genetic sequencing of different ethnicities, like there's no difference in the race, right? It's just the way you look is different because of evolution and different areas that people have lived. Like, but the whole concept of race, like race does not exist. We are all human. However, racism does, I guess. So so this virtual museum exists to kind of explain that and break that down. And so she and Bina are very passionate about anti-racism work.
Well, they're an interracial couple.
Yeah, right? I was just going to say they're an interracial couple. So Martine is Jewish and white. Bina is Black. So there's a lot of work that they've done together that's specifically around like anti-racism. So that's one of it. So there's that part. And then there is the religious part of it, which is like you believing that your consciousness can live forever. And I think they refer to as joiners, where you willingly are joining this movement and essentially like working to upload your consciousness to
It's like a cloud.
Yeah.
A communal cloud.
A communal cloud. Yeah. So it's there's a lot to it.
In theory, but are you, so that's your consciousness. So essentially you can continue to live on in the cloud and interact with other consciousnesses without a physical form. So it's literally like when we were growing up and there were all of those like online chat programs where you had an avatar and you went to the fake club, fake discotheque, the fake record store, whatever, and interacted with people that were around the world, but were in that location with you in avatar form. It would be very similar, but just your consciousness.
Yeah, but it's your consciousness and it's all happening virtually. And I mean that like, there's so many other things that it's like, wait, but what about this other thing? Like,
I feel like I have a tendency to get nihilistic at times. And so for me, I think back on our episodes with Chanel and how she said that human history is cyclical. And you know, I asked her, I was like, are we just doomed to repeat ourselves? And she's like, there is just this, you know, you forget and then you do it over and it's cyclical. And, you know, and just all of the fantasy and sci-fi that I've read about people who are immortal and they're like, oh, once you've seen one revolution, you've seen them all. And so I'm just like, I wouldn't want to live forever if it's just the same bullshit over and over and over. Like I want to go and I want to be like, I'm done.
I'm peacing out.
It's over. It's someone else's fight now.
Well, and I also wonder too, like I was thinking about, I was like, okay, if everybody's uploaded to the cloud, like what kind of wars would then occur? Yeah. Like what happens then? So I don't know. I was like,
could you imagine being the last few humans left or being the last human left and everyone else is already like, living uploaded. In the cloud, uploaded, doing all the things.
Yeah.
And you are, there's actually a TV show called Upload.
Oh.
And it's this, it's literally this concept where after you die, you get uploaded into this cloud and you have a avatar version of yourself and everything. But just like how you have these apps that like they're free, but if you want bonus stuff, you got to pay extra and like all of that. And people, it goes into what class division looks like and what like immigrant relations are like and just all that stuff. And so it's like, oh, if you have only like 5 gigs of data, then you live in this black and white basement and you really can't do anything because everything you do is going to cost you. So you're basically like in solitary confinement. And then like if your family has hooked you up with like the premium package, then you go to this 5-star resort and you have this concierge and da 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 da. And so it just explores all of the dynamics of like,
yeah,
what it would be like.
Yeah, it.
I recommend it. It's a good show.
That sounds good. Sounds really good. Yeah. I think it's a really cool concept. I think for me, the thing I keep getting hung up on is like, if you, I don't know, if you upload your significant other or your child or your parents to this cloud and then you can still interact with them. But once their physical form is gone, it's like, is that really them? Are you, again, just, are you putting off the process of grieving and like, what is that going to do to people mentally? Like,
Well, I mean, Chanel did call it a meat suit.
That's true.
So
that's
like,
true. But I think there is something like very, I don't know, like
tactile, like the
tactile.
Touch.
And it's also like,
what are your love languages? This is what I want to know.
Hmm,
I want to know what your love language. I feel like you definitely, one of your love languages is definitely touch.
You know what? I feel like it isn't. And in some way, so I think words of affirmation is a big one for me. It's been a long time since I've done it, but
receiving,
I've realized like.
Or giving or both?
I think receiving is one. And then giving is for me, like acts of service. Like for me, I'm like, oh, I'll do somebody's dishes or like I'll clean and not in a like I expect you to give me something way, but in a like, oh, this would be really nice for this person, which and I feel like acts of service is also a way that I receive. I think, you know what, maybe touches. I don't know. Because I love hugs, but
I think we all need to reevaluate. Yeah. We need to
figure it out.
The quiz, especially now in COVID when our priorities are shifting.
Yeah, I think the reason why I keep getting hung up on it is so like when I lost my mom, I found myself like very much clinging to any, and it makes sense, right? Like you want to remember that person, you want to remember what did they sound like, what did they like, what was the sound of their laugh. So anything that I had that like I have, I think it's like 3 birthday cards from her that. Literally it's the same exact card because this is just like who my mom was, and she signed it the same way too, but it's like 3, like I think one's from when I turned 15, one's from when I turned 18, and one's from when I turned like 22 or something.
Yeah,
same card, same signature. I think it's hilarious. But I think like one of the things that made it easier and also difficult but easier for me to process it was that like I had things of hers, but it wasn't like a way that I could directly interact with her, if that made sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. And this is, again, a very personal thing, but I feel like if I had a way to like talk to my mom's consciousness, I probably would have spent a lot of time doing that and get it kind of like, it's like in Harry Potter, the mirror that Harry finds where like he goes in front of it and it shows you your deepest desires, and his is to know his family. So he spends hours in front of it just staring at his family because there's a grief there that he hasn't processed because he's an 11-year-old kid. But it can be so dangerous because you just like get caught up in that. And then at the same time, I don't know, maybe it would help people process the grief because they would be able to like say a proper goodbye or something. Like, I don't know. I just am like, oh God, what would this do to us? But who's to say? And there has been a lot of, there are a lot of people who criticize Martine and are like, it'll never happen. You can't do that. And, you know, but I also think like we also said we would never go to space, you know?
Yeah, because Martine has really lived her life listening to the haters and like really taking their advice.
Yeah, I know. And there is, I do have this quote from Martine that kind of like touches on that, on like the naysayers, which he is. It's a pretty long one, so bear with me. There are tens of millions of people working on writing code that expresses more and more aspects of our human consciousness. And you don't have to be a genius to see that all of these threads are going to come together and ultimately create human consciousness. And it's something we'll value. There are so many things to do in this life. And if we could have a simulacrum, a digital doppelganger of ourselves that helps us process books, do shopping, be our best friends, which I love, be our best friends. I believe our mind clones, these digital versions of ourselves, will ultimately be our best friends. And for me personally, and Bina personally, we love each other like crazy. Each day we're always saying like, wow, I love you even more than 30 years ago. And so for us, the prospect of mind clones and regenerating bodies is that our love affair can go on forever. And we never get bored of each other. And I'm sure we never will.
What if my mind clone, they take like just like a tiny, tiny amount more evil than my normal self has? And then I end up being this like evil Julia that like wears an eye patch and like tries to take over the world. Like, I'm not going to be, I mean, I might be best friends with her. Actually, she sounds kind of pretty cool.
You turn into the, like, what is it, the steering wheel Axiom in Wall-E, who, like, tries to sabotage the human existence because it gains a consciousness. You know, there's that.
Once or like you watch Community.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point.
Longer, there is an episode where the characters from the darkest timeline find their way into the timeline that we follow as the viewer. And it's like everyone's evil twin versions of themselves from this other timeline.
Oh,
and that's just what I imagine.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, that's it. And that was like something that I was thinking about. It was like, you upload these human consciousness. What if they then gain knowledge or realize that they're not really you, like they are an upload, like now you're causing existential dread in your mind file. Like, I don't know. I was like, wait, what if they know? Like,
I think it says a lot about us as people, and especially in our relationship and our friendship, that your mind immediately goes to a place of, my mind clone is going to have a lot of anxiety. And I go to a place of, my mind clone is going to try to take over the world. Just knowing you, that says a lot about us.
So that's Martine.
Love her.
She's dope as hell. I know. My sources were Wikipedia, the TED Talk, and Washington Post.
So if I love that you are professional and you quote your sources, I'm not going to fucking do that. But if people want to learn more about Martine's foundation venture, et cetera, or contribute or donate or get involved, like what's the website or the socials?
I did not look that up. I would say, honestly, like, go, this is going to sound so cheesy, but go to Wikipedia. That's where I would start. There's links to all of it there. I would also say, like, and I did a lot of research, but I know that there's so much more to unpack with everything. So I would say, like, go through it. Cause no hate to Martine, but like the terrorism movement, the fact that it's like a religion, I was like, a religion or a cult? Like, only that's also because cults are on my mind all the time. So educate yourself, decide if you want to like sign up and join. I'm just saying, you know, how deep does this go? Also, I just don't want to put my mind on Google Drive. Like, that's where I'm at. Please don't sue me. This is all me just being paranoid because that's who I am as a person. So yeah, Wikipedia is where I'm going to say go to there.
I would definitely ask for my mind to be uploaded into the cloud, and I would put in like a hack code that is undetectable. Get it through into the cloud, and then as soon as there's like a trigger event of some sort, it'll trigger and my consciousness will turn on, and the plan will be start a cult, dominate the cloud. They'll never see it coming. They'll never know. How are they going to know? How are they going to know?
Who's going to know?
How are they going to know? No one's going to know.
Just the data engineers that are like monitoring the cloud. They're going to be like, hey, this Julia over here is getting a little wild. I think she's trying to start.
Well, so then here's the question. Are the data engineers also consciousnesses in the cloud?
I don't know. Yeah. Like, who's monitoring the situation? Is everybody just like wild and out? I have a lot of questions.
Or are we like relegating? Are we like relegating a community of breeders, like human breeders, to breed more humans to have a human type of oversight on the consciousness cloud? Because that gets into this whole conversation of eugenics, and it's an issue, obviously. Yeah. But we're also talking about putting our consciousness up into the cloud. So I think, you know, nothing is really off the table in this conversation.
I don't know anymore. Like, it's got kind of a Matrix vibe. There's a lot. There's a lot to unpack with it.
I love it.
What does it all mean?
I fucking love it. What does it all mean? Martine's a badass. Yeah. I'm into it.
She's pretty dope.
I'm into her. Yeah, very much.
Over to you.
All right. I want to talk about my badass woman. My women weren't necessarily making contributions to save children in the world or like help people live their truth. They were just being like badass bitches. I'm talking about Captain Ching Shi.
Yes. I'm so
fucking excited because this woman was the most badass female pirate in history that you may not even know
about. She's so dope. I am so excited.
We know nothing about her former life. Not former life, but like early life. We know nothing up until like she gets married. So what we do know is she's in the Canton region of China. She is a sex worker on a floating brothel, which I was like, that's kind of awesome. Like I immediately thought of like a cruise ship, but it's a brothel. And I was like, that's fantastic. But that was just an aside. Anyway, so this is how we like start to like learn about her. And there was this dude named Cheng the First. Oh no, I'm sorry. Cheng Yi.
Okay.
Cheng Yi. That's an I. That's his last name. So Cheng Yi, and he like came upon her. He was like a generational pirate. Like his grandpappy was a pirate. So he just like went into the family business and became a pirate of the seas in the South China Sea. And so he would come to this brothel and he would continue to see her. And he like became obsessed with her, fell in love with her. We don't know like the full context, but he was just like, oh, I need to marry her. Like that's my lady. We don't know. There are differing accounts of whether she was a sex worker or whether she was the madam of the brothel, but she has this enterprising spirit that we're going to see. And this like brain for business and this interesting ethical code. So she's in her mid-20s and she gets married to Cheng Yi. What she kind of negotiates within the marriage, because he was so in love with her and so obsessed with her, is that she would stop working in the brothel and she would go with him and she would be his partner in the seas. So they would be like a pirate couple. And for that, they would do a 50-50 split of all of the profits. So, you know, you and me, we live in California. We get the 50-50 rule. But when you think of South China in the late 18th century, because she was born somewhere between like 1771 and 1775, right? That's not like a 50-50 stake is not what's going to go down. And so I was kind of just like, okay, like the pirates are all about equity and parity and I'm here for it. You know what I mean? So they get together and they're like power couple, hashtag the Carters, Bay and Jay. They immediately together, because Cheng Yi had the strongest force. And so they immediately were like, how can we grow? Yep. How can we scale? Here's the thing about it, right? She's bringing him so much ambition. She like negotiated a 50-50 stake and she's like really going hard on being a boss ass bitch. But this is where her name changes. So she's still like, we're thinking, oh, this is so progressive, pirates. Hey. She had to change her name to Cheng Yi Sao, which literally means wife of Cheng Yi. So that leads me to ask, like, you're this badass woman. There's this guy that's obsessed with you, in love with you, and you get married and you negotiate the stake. And then you're like, I have an expansion plan for the business. So you get this kind of fiscal and authoritative equity, but you still have to, you don't get like identity autonomy. I mean, in an ideal world, you'd get both, but like she chose the fiscal and the power and the authority. Maybe she didn't even think about it, but it just leads me to wonder, like, if that was a choice that you were faced with or I was faced with, like what would you choose?
If my choice is like, you have power in this one realm, but then it's also a name change that has to happen, right? Is that the...
It's the fact that you get parity in terms of power, authority, and finances, but the entire world, and even within your relationship, you are known as the wife of. You don't have autonomous identity. I will answer that very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the fucking money.
See, I knew.
Maybe that says something about me as a person.
Honestly, I was like, oh, like my identity. But I think if you were just, you get to be in the background, like pulling puppet strings, like I could be into that. I think I could be into that.
Yeah. Well, she pulls a lot of strings because under her joining with Cheng Yi, they basically unify all of the next pirate companies in power below them, the smaller ones, and they ended up getting a total of 70,000 men, like a labor force of 70,000 people, and 400 junk ships, which were those like famous Chinese seas that you see with those like beautiful sails that have the tiers and oh, gorgeous.
God
damn. 400 ships and 70,000.
That's a big army is all I'm thinking. I'm just like, so who are you going to go conquer? Like, what's up? What's up?
Oh, they're going to do a lot of shit. Because keep in mind, they're also pirates. They're not like, not like, oh, the Navy is unifying with blah, blah, blah. Like, it's, they're about to just fuck up everything in the South China Sea. So they unify all these ships. They really start getting a foothold in their power. They decide, let's have kids, right? Like, let's have some heirs. They adopt a son, an older son. Then they have sons of their own. I don't know if this is something that she was thinking of or if this is something that just happened naturally, but Cheng Yi died prematurely. And so her choice was, okay, I can be a widow or I can take control of all of these fleets.
I mean,
but I can't do it as a woman.
Oh.
So She convinced the chieftains that were the most trusted by her husband to allow her to pull a Woody Allen and marry her adopted son because he was of age at this time.
What?
The very first child that they adopted together, who was the heir to the pirate dynasty, got their permission, married them. That adopted son came to power.
What?
And she, he was essentially her puppet. Like, she ran shit. Like, she was the admiral of the fleet. And everyone knew it. And everyone knew she was the shot caller. And everyone knew she was the one. But from an optics standpoint, her adopted son was bumped to being the leader of this huge fleet. And she married him so that she could continue to have sway. But she, when her husband died, she had to change her name again to be Changxi, so the widow of Chang. So her name is Changxi because she is the widow of Chang. That is literally, like, she is Captain the Widow of Chang.
Wow.
That's it. And that just is her name for the rest of her life, even after she married her adopted son.
So even, even though technically she...
Yeah,
so she doesn't change her name. Like, she will just forever be the widow of, because that was the first husband.
Yep. All right. Yep. And in polite society, that's what you did when you were widowed. You would essentially retreat into society as a widow. That was your legacy. And you would take care of your remaining family.
So is her remarrying not common?
No.
Okay. Wow.
But she's also a pirate, so she's like, fuck it. Yeah. Oh, wow. Buckle up.
Okay.
Buckle up, because she gets even more badass. So she rolls out a strict set of rules and a strict set of punishments, because she's like, we're going to need to standardize operations around here, fellas.
We need some SLAs in this bitch.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Some OKRs.
Yeah.
So some of these rules included, you do not challenge the seniority in the chain of command.
Oh.
So, like, you don't talk back to your superior officer. She essentially implemented these rules and punishments as if it was the Admiral Fleet.
Damn.
Or the Imperial Fleet. I'm sorry, the Chinese Imperial Fleet, or like any other kind of naval, you know, in the Navy, you have like very strict chain of command. You're dehumanized to basically like follow that chain of command. Don't speak out of turn, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So she implemented a lot of the same things. She basically said, you can't challenge the, but she did it. She made it pirate, like naval commands, but make it pirate. So you couldn't challenge seniority in the chain of command. If you did, you were immediately beheaded.
Well, all right. I mean, yeah.
And any raids on villages, any deals, any game plans would have to be approved by her. Everything would have to be approved by her. All of the allied villages that they were going into could not be touched or damaged.
Wow.
Their women could not be touched. Like, very much respectful.
Yeah.
Every single thing from a raid or from a mission that was brought in, all of the booty, was counted meticulously, logged, and then dispersed amongst the people based on their standing in the pirate army.
Wow.
So she like came in and she like took you from a startup to like a straight up corporation. She was like, let's fucking get it. Here's the other thing. If you were caught going AWOL, like if you went AWOL and they caught you, they would bring you back, chop your ears off, and then parade you around all of the other pirates in the company to be like, if you try to leave, we'll fucking find you. And we won't kill you, but we'll just fuck you up a little bit. But she saw both sides of the same coin. So she saw that punishment could only instill so much fear. And there needed to be a rewards system in order to get allegiance, in order to get that respect. And so she was like, she was very transparent with how many cuts she got, how many cuts all of the other pirates got, like making sure they got their cut. The revenue was placed in a public fund. All of the so what would happen was the person or the group of people that seized the goods would get a finder's fee of 20%.
Wow.
And then like the upper echelon would like take their cut that they needed to like keep shit running. The rest would be put in a public fund for them, their families, and their allied villages.
Damn. So like take care of your own too.
Yeah. Wow. Exactly. Here's the other thing that she would do, which is kind of, it's a conflicting feeling that I have, and I want to hear your thoughts.
Okay.
So if they went and raided an enemy village and they captured the women, she would then assess them. And if they were deemed unattractive, they were set free. If they were deemed attractive, then the captains would get their first dibs on if they wanted to marry the women, like a woman from the group. And if not, then they were sold into sex work. So on the one hand, it's kind of like I respect her from a business standpoint. It's like everyone at the time, anyone that would raid and get women, like, odds are like they were raping the women, they were killing the women, they were all of these things. And so it's like there's a chance that you could either be set free or you can be married off, but like you're not going to necessarily die.
Yeah.
And if you're a smart woman, then you obviously like make yourself unattractive. I mean, it sounds terrible, but like give yourself an injury that deems you unattractive or something, and then you'll be set free.
Yeah. I think I was like, okay. And then it's the like, and if you were attractive, but nobody wanted you, now we're going to force you into sex work, where it's like, I'm all for like sex work. Like, hell yeah. Get your money. Do whatever. Like that's being forced into it. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, what? Yeah. No. Mm-mm.
Yeah. So, I don't know the cut. I don't know.
Like, yeah. That part of
what
like,
the conditions were. But if you recall, where she started was a madam.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if she was selling them into her own brothels.
Probably.
Which, again, from an ethics standpoint, horrible, terrible, ridiculous, disgusting. From a business standpoint, like,
yeah, from a business standpoint, you're like,
she's kind of a G.
Yeah, there's, oh boy, oh my god, she's,
I know, it gets even better.
Oh god,
you know it gets better, right?
Oh dear.
So she commanded this force, and she had so much respect and so much power and so much fear and so much like everything that they colloquially, the people of South China started calling it the Widow's Armada.
That is a dope name. I just got so many goosebumps. Wow, 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 wow. The Widow's Armada. What a dope fucking name. If somebody hasn't taken that name, and is like, that sounds like a metal band. I'm just saying.
Yes.
Name your band
that. Does. Yes. Please name your band that. And then send us photos of like the merch. Or send us the merch.
I want to know if there is a band already with that name. No, it's not taken. Look.
Take it.
Somebody take it.
If
you can. I don't see why not.
If I even had a morsel, if I even had an electron of musical talent, I would.
You're learning how to play guitar, right?
So you should.
I'm just saying.
I was. Yes. Okay. I was. I'm not at the moment.
Okay. I was gonna say
I'm reprioritizing a little bit.
All right. You learn how to play guitar, I'll pick up bass again. We'll be the Widow's Armada.
Okay, but can either of us sing?
I can, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
Oh my God. What if it's the Widow's Armada and it's a girl rock band, but we just do like girl rock covers of sea shanties.
I love sea shanties. Hold on. Let me, I look.
The Widow's Armada.
The thing that I mean, have been like missing so much.
From a branding perspective. Beautiful. It's
yeah. You would easily look Renaissance fairs. We've got this. We do pirate festivals. Yeah. That's the thing I used to do. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I was in high school. But there's a niche for this. And if we bring in sea shanties, I'll call my choir friends. We'll get some sick harmonies. This will be dope. We got this. Let's do this. You know what?
Okay.
You guys can't take the Widow's Armada as your name. Julia and I are claiming it. TM, TM, TM. It's ours.
Okay. I have an alternative pitch.
Okay.
I facilitate you forming this band, and then I, like, Kris Jenner manage, right. Book, produce,
you're
et
the puppet master
I'm
of
the, I'm the business the end. Widow's I'm the party Armada. Master?
I said puppet master, but I like party master way more. So, yeah, you're the party master of the Widow's Armada. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
I love that. I'm obsessed with that. That's going to be my new Instagram bio. So, okay. So at this point, the Widow's Armada, she's like, I've been doing all of this work my whole life that has made everyone look down on me, like some bandit and some hooligan and some outlaw. And now that I have enough of a foothold in the South Chinese Sea, and now that I have the manpower and the respect and all of it, like, I'm going to transition this into a legit business.
Fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she starts intercepting the very, very lucrative salt trade that's happening in the South China Sea.
I was also going to say, like, she's like, now I'm going to turn this into a legitimate business. I'm like, you already have 70,000 employees. Like, you're pretty fucking legit. You are the Disney of your time.
But what she doesn't have
is an LLC.
True. But she doesn't have like the legitimate, she has all of the pieces, but she doesn't have the reputation of legitimacy.
Got it.
She is a pirate queen.
Yeah.
So she is an outlaw. She is a villain. Everyone's going to villainize her rather than give her a chance.
Yep.
But here's where she's smart. Because she intercepts the salt trade, and instead of being like, yo, we're going to steal your salt, we're going to peddle it, we're going to like push this illegal salt. Instead, she captures the traders, the actual people that were doing the trades from a legitimate standpoint. Mm. And she said, instead of working for who you work, you're going to work for us now. And I'm going to make you a sweet, sweet deal that's going to lead you to essentially be a double agent for the Widow's Armada.
Wow. Wait.
And she succeeds.
So this is a merger.
And she, this is a merger, but like this is a hostile takeover, but like the legitimate business does not know it.
Yeah.
Basically, because what she does is these traders start like are still getting the supply and they still have their connections. And there's this invisible middleman that's essentially cutting in to the business.
Mm-hmm.
And
damn,
she grows so strong in this that she gets full armed control of the entire South China salt trade. And her control becomes so expanded and her armada becomes so strong and sound that she becomes stronger than the Imperial Navy.
I was waiting to do that. Like,
there it is. There it is. And so she's like, okay, the Imperial Navy ain't got shit on the Widow's Armada. So what's the next thing? The next logical thing in her mind
is take over the Imperial Navy.
Almost. She doesn't necessarily want to take them over.
Okay.
She sees that as small potatoes. She's like, we're already stronger than them.
Oh my God.
We don't need them. They're insignificant. We're going fucking global. US Navy.
Oh my God.
Portuguese Navy. East India Company.
Fuck.
She's coming for all of them. But She underestimates the Portuguese fleet. There's a showdown, and not only does the Portuguese fleet kind of fuck up the Widow's Armada a little bit, but now what happens is there starts to be dissension within the ranks of the chieftains in the Widow Armada. Whoa.
This fall, the Widow Armani, a new collection by Armani.
A lot of black veils.
Oh, boy.
Oh, the Widow's Armada. Uh-huh. Basically, like, shit starts popping off. And so she pivots.
Okay.
And I feel like she pivots the only way a woman could.
Mm.
She's like, I'm not going to double down. I know where this is going.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leverage the fact that we are still in power and we are still super fucking strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to be the one that negotiates the terms of a deal.
Oh.
She's like, eventually there's going to be a negotiation.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of who walks away the winner. I'm going to force their hand and do the negotiation now while I still have leverage. And I'm going to fucking tell them my terms. And her terms are immunity.
Nice.
So she approaches the imperial powers and she's like, listen, I'll dissolve my armada. I'll decommission a bunch of shit, whatever. In exchange, I want a full pardon for myself, all of the senior leaders in my armada, and all of the pirates. Mm-hmm. And I want all of us to have our freedom.
Hell yeah.
And I will decommission ships. However, I want you to let me keep 70 or 80. No big deal.
Yeah.
From the 400 plus that she had. And they sent, like, in the beginning, they were like, no, we're not going to do this. Da, 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 da. And she was like, that's fine. Like, I can still fuck you up where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
So she kind of, like, dug the knife in a little deeper strategically with a few more raids and things like that. And then they're like, all right, we'll come to the table. We'll talk. So they come to the table and they're like, we're ready for amnesty. We accept your terms. And she's like, okay, well, my terms have changed. I now want 120 ships. And I want all 17,000 of the pirates still in my company to have immunity, as well as myself and like all of my higher ups. Mm-hmm. And I want the senior pirates to have official stations in the Imperial Army. So they're like, fuck, fine. So 17,000 pirates.
Mm-hmm.
There were a little over 300 of them were persecuted for like actual crimes that there was evidence of.
Okay.
The rest of them were granted immunity and let go. She got her 120 ships. She got titles for the senior leaders in her armada. And she got a title of lieutenant colonel for her husband's son. Once again, putting him in a place of legitimate power.
Yeah.
So that she, as his wife,
oh my gosh.
She's no longer seen as the pirate queen. She's seen as the respectable wife of a rising military star, because only a few months after he entered the Imperial Army, he was promoted from lieutenant colonel to colonel. And so with that negotiation, she took a few steps back in order to take one giant leap forward and completely legitimize herself and all of the senior members of her armada.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
And what did she do? So a few short years after, her husband's son dies.
Uh-huh.
She's a widow once more.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're probably like, all right, she's done. Like, all the husbands are dead. She's probably just going to chill. She's older now. And she's like, the fact that she's the widow of this army hero gives her so much social standing and so much money. So she literally leans back and becomes an investor. And she invests in the salt trade. She invests in gambling houses. She invests in brothels.
Hell yeah.
All of these things that are so familiar to her that she knows can bring her steady money. And when China was on the brink of the first opium war, mm-hmm. where British traders were smuggling in opium, like the trades were not in a good place financially, economically. So the British traders were smuggling in opium, getting the folks in China addicted to it so that they can have this revenue stream. There was the advisor to the imperial commissioner. His name was Lin Zexu. He eventually, I think, would go on and be the prime minister, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. Anyway, at this point, he's an advisor in the first opium war to basically be like, we have a problem. We need to stop the British from bringing in opium and getting our people addicted. And so he taps her. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, you were a pirate in the seas. You knew all about the trade routes. You knew all about the shit that was happening. Like, what can I do to stop this? Mm-hmm. And she advised him from a naval perspective on strategy. In her 60s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hell yes.
And then at the age of 70, she died peacefully in her sleep.
Amazing. She just chilled out. Did her strategy in terms of the opium war, like, did that shut that shit down? Like, what happened with that?
It didn't. I mean, obviously it exploded into a war.
Right.
It didn't really shut it down. And there was like, it kept going, and it became like, as Chinese people were moving to Britain or being brought to Britain, they brought the opium with them. Then they got the mm-hmm. British addicted, and then America. And it was like, it turned into like a very, very big problem that we still to this day see with the heroin addictions that are happening. So it didn't necessarily like stop it, but it was one of those things of like, if you are able to see something coming, you're better prepared to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like instead of being completely blindsided, he had the information that he needed to strategically go into this war. So it wasn't necessarily something that stopped because it's still going on, but it was advice that he needed from a naval perspective.
Damn.
And she ran the South China Sea. She ran all those trade routes. So naturally he went to her and he's like, what should we be looking out for?
Yeah.
Like, how can we get the advantage on the seas?
Yeah. Ugh.
She helped him.
Says
Captain Cheng Shi, the widow of Cheng. The most badass female pirate.
Hell yeah.
Ever.
I just love like, the business mindset of like, mm-hmm. yeah, let me just take over, run my shit.
Yeah.
I know when to gracefully peace out.
Mm-hmm.
Magical.
Well, anyone that's ever watched those shows that will probably have a white male lead, as always, but like Peaky Blinders or Sons of Anarchy or any of these shows where it's like there's a person and they are a good person and they have family values and they like – want to rise above their means. They're ambitious, but they've been relegated to a life of crime. We see the struggle of like, I'm going to do what I can with what I have right now. Mm-hmm. Always trying to find the mechanisms and the pathways to gain legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a tale as old as time. This is just, we very rarely, if ever, see it from the perspective of an Asian woman.
Yeah.
And fun fact, Captain Cheng is seen in one or two of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but she makes like a brief.
Oh, yeah.
Later in life. She's an older Asian woman. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A little nod.
So, yeah. I mean, if we can, I don't know if that's like a call I need to make to Reese Witherspoon or like if that would be better to make like for Charlize, but I think we need
this film.
We need something, whether it's a TV show or a film about this. And I mean like an Asian female protagonist, like literally all of the content is there. Everything you need, like the sex, the violence, the ethical dilemmas that like the love for this character, everything is there.
I wonder if
we just need to get it up.
Part of me is like, is somebody making a movie about this? No.
No. No, of course not. No one wants to finance. I'm gonna just say the truth. No one wants to finance a film with a Asian female as the lead.
Lame. What petition do we need to sign to get this started? That would be so fucking dope.
I think we need to fucking
do it
ourselves. All right.
Let's figure it out. We know people. We'll find people. We'll get the funding. Yeah. We'll do this.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. I'm very into it.
So into it.
So that's Captain Chang-Chi.
Damn. Thank you. That was a whirlwind and so badass.
Yeah. So again, I think it says a lot about our personalities that you chose this, you know, resilient humanitarian wanting to change the world for the better and thinking of innovation. And I talked about a former sex worker turned pirate queen.
Hey.
Just ran.
Yeah. Shit. I was like, she ran shit. She took over shit. Yeah. She was meticulous as fuck. Like, that's what's
but
up.
I feel like she did it the way that a woman could, because mm-hmm. you don't make those decisions and go on that trajectory as an outlaw if you're not tuned into the empathy and the compassion.
Yeah.
Like, if there was a man doing that, he would have been like, fuck no, I'm doubling down. And then the Imperial Navy would have just, like, fucked up everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think there's also that, like, thinking about the livelihoods of the, of, like, her armada. It's pretty dope.
And the villagers.
Yeah.
That they were like, this isn't our enemy, so you can't exploit them.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless they were women. And then she did.
No, those were only from enemy villages. They would, enemy villages, they would raid them for all valuable items and then probably kill the men and then take the women and either set them free if they were ugly or.
Wild. Yeah. Which I will say though, like, I mean, sure, they're being set free because they're not attractive. But if you've just decimated their village, like you actually, I feel like you've probably mm-hmm. left them worse for wear.
I think it's all about perspective.
Yeah.
It's all about perspective. Would you rather go back to a singed, dilapidated village where a lot of the people you know are dead, or would you rather leave behind the singed, dilapidated village where everyone is still dead but you now have to
be married to someone or be forced into sex work? Neither of those options seem ideal. They're all like, ah, fuck. But yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
I know.
That's right.
I know. But I love them. So that's two out of four.
Yeah. So we're going to do the next two next week.
We're going to do the next two. Yep. Next week. Cool. And before we sign off, I just want to talk about our feel good recommendations. So what we want to recommend for our listeners that will get them feeling good.
Yeah. Feel good do you recommendations. Have something? I feel like I recommended this before. So if I did, mm-hmm. apologies, I might be doubling down on it. There was a book that I read a few weeks ago called You Should Talk to Someone. Did I talk about this already?
You may have.
Okay. It's a therapist, like it's her journey through therapy. It's really dope. Highly recommend that. I cried a lot and also felt really good reading it, watching it. Aww. My God. So that is a recommendation. And then I think my other one, and this is just like kind of general, but is like, especially with how kind of like wild the past year has been, literally we just hit like the 1 year anniversary of going into lockdown, which is fucking wild. I think my biggest thing is like going back to what you were saying at the top, like be gentle with yourself. And like, if spending 2 hours on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook, well, I don't know about Facebook, but like if spending like time on social media is like a thing that is making you feel good right now, like don't beat yourself up for doing that. Like it has been a hard fucking year. So
I tried to set up a promotion for one of our posts on Instagram, on the P&E Instagram account. And in order to do so, you have to be linked to Facebook and you have to have a special like setup within Facebook. And it has to be like within these certain constructs. And if you have any questions or you need to troubleshoot something, like there aren't live people. Like you have to go through all of these deep diving into these forums on like, is this your problem? Well, here's how to fix it, your fucking self. And so I was just like, I hadn't been forced to interact with Facebook until that moment for a long time. And I was like, oh, this is
no.
It's like going into the Forbidden Forest on the adventure.
Hate Facebook.
Going into the spider's den and
frustrating.
The Lord of the Rings. That's what it's like. It's like going into the it's like going into the spider's den in in Lord of the Rings. That's exactly what it's like to go on Facebook.
Oh God. Yeah. It just feels messy and like this weird ickiness all of the time. And I don't like it. I guess don't go on Facebook is my other feel good advice. Stay away from it. Stay far, far away. Yeah.
A second.
I don't know. I think, just like be gentle with yourself. I'll think of something in a minute, I'm sure, as you're talking. Yeah. Like, oh my God, another thing. But yeah, be gentle with yourself. If you're into reading books on like mental health, you should talk to someone, is brilliant. And then this is another one, which I haven't done yet, but I'm planning on this week. Doing something for your little self, like trying to reconnect. I think especially like having been in lockdown, I think a lot of us are getting super nostalgic. And I highly recommend, if you haven't, like, and you can, pick a day where you like go buy your favorite like cereal as like from your childhood and just like eat that shit and watch cartoons. Like that is my feel good. Also, FYI.
Hey Arnold is on Paramount Plus.
Yes. Hey Arnold is on Paramount Plus and Hulu. I hope I still need to finish watching the last like two episodes. Trix, the cereal. I didn't know this. I discovered this is my feel good. This is actually my feel good. I discovered last week that Trix has been re-released in its OG shapes, like in the fruit shapes from our childhood. I lost my goddamn mind. So it's still delicious. There you go.
If this tells you a little bit about why I am the way I am, just know that as a child, mm-hmm. I ate Honey Bunches of Oats with almonds.
Honey Bunches of Oats is delicious.
Okay, it's but as a so child, good. I didn't have any fucking marshmallows or food coloring. I didn't have any of those cereals. Those chips, what were they called? The ones where it was literally just chocolate chip cookies in the cereal.
Cookie Crisp.
That's the one. Uh-huh. I didn't have any of that shit. I literally, like as a child, I would sit at the table and I would eat my Honey Bunches of Oats with almonds. And I don't know, read the paper. I don't know.
Take your like fiber digesters. Yes. Okay. But yes. You know what you can do as an adult now? You can go buy Cookie Crisp and Lucky Charms and Trix, and you can make yourself sick on that sugar. I don't know that I want to.
Although there is now Trix this brand, I don't know what it is, but there is a brand that's making healthier, like non-processed versions of the cereals that we grew up with.
No.
And they claim to give you the same taste profile of that nostalgia, but it's better for you because it doesn't have like yellow number 5.
See, I don't know, because like, is there going to be that weird chemically aftertaste? Because that's part of the nostalgia for me. You know what I mean? I'll give it a whirl, I suppose. But yeah. I'm just letting you know that you now, adult Julia, can chow down. And nobody's going to tell you no. That's the best thing about being an adult. You're like, oh.
My bowels might.
Well, that's
No, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to shit on your feel good at all. I don't mean to shit on it at all. This is just like me being triggered by the trauma of not being able to eat the stuff that like as kids all of my friends were able to eat.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in like a very like one of those health nutty household.
Yeah.
And so like I remember sneaking in, like a friend at school gave me a bag of Gushers and I went home and it was in my backpack. And then I like waited until the perfect time where I had alone time. And then I like snuck into the corner of the room and like sat on the floor behind a piece of furniture and like just absolutely like had a moment with these gushers where I just like ate them slowly. And I saw what it was like to like bite into one, eat one whole, take it apart with my hands, like really feel the texture. Like I had a full experience.
Yeah.
Like understanding gushers. And then I remember someone in my family, either my mom or my grandma, were like, "Where are you?" And I was like, I had to really quickly hide the empty wrapper and just like shoved the remaining gushers in my mouth and like chewed really fast. So I think like you saying you can do something for your inner little Julia, and you can get the contraband or you can get the snacks that were contraband growing up, and you can just allow yourself the space to eat them with dignity instead of
I mean, if you want to hide, if you want to hide behind a chair while you eat a bowl of Cookie Crisp, I'm not going to be like, you can't do that. You have to enjoy it out of the open. Like, if that sparks joy, do it. Eat them wherever you want, man.
I'm dying. Oh my God. I mean, that, I think that's really, 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 really great advice. And I think the what is so special about it is like, if you have any shame or guilt attached to it, that was conditioned. Mm-hmm. You were conditioned to feel like sitting with that and like processing it and like hopefully like exposure therapy, like trying to get past it. Yeah. Cookie Crisp exposure therapy.
Yeah.
CCET. Put a trademark on that, bitch.
TM. Oh my God. What's got you feeling good? Or your feel good thing.
Okay. Yes. So what I just finished a show. We binged it. Has me feeling really good. And I highly, highly recommend to everyone. And you may have already seen it. If you've already seen it, watch it again. It is on Apple Plus and it is called Ted Lasso.
I've heard about this. I've heard a lot of people talk about it.
Because Jason Sudeikis has won a Critics' Choice Award and a Golden Globe. And he showed up to one of those awards. I want to say it was the Golden Globes in a tie-dye hoodie looking really disheveled. It was like 2 a.m. in London where he was shooting season 2. And everyone, like, I don't know that we have confirmation that he was high, but like, everyone was like, he's so stoned. And the thing about it is like, having seen the show now, I'm like, oh, I get it. Because what the premise of the show is this white guy from Kansas, non-assuming, wears New Balances.
Oh.
Gets selected. He is the coach for Division II, like college football, American football team. And he gets hired to coach a Premier League soccer team in London.
Oh.
And so he shows up in London and he is just himself.
Yeah.
And he is surrounded by people who are manipulative and jaded and just like have all of this trauma that they have not processed and they have not worked through, and just like egos and bullying and all of these things. And he just brings so much humanity and so much joy and just like accepts people as they are and just supports people. And the writing is so witty and so sharp that even if you've seen it, you can rewatch it and catch stuff. And like you at first, you're like, ugh, another like white male protagonist, like da da da. But he is the ally that we all need. There is one quote that was one of my favorites where he has absolutely zero awareness about the sport of soccer. And for anyone who doesn't know, soccer or football, where it's known, how it's known everywhere else in the world, is played 2 45-minute halves. You can have additional time at the end of each, and you can either win, you can lose, or you can tie. And so Ted is learning the rules. And when he learns that you can tie, that that's a thing, he says, if God would have wanted games to end in a tie, she wouldn't have invented numbers. And so it's one of those like emotional things where you're like, oh, it's a white guy from Kansas bringing up God. And then he's like, she wouldn't have invented numbers. And what brings me even more joy is there is a Reddit subthread for all things Ted Lasso. And there is one thread that has really, really gotten a lot of traction. Mm-hmm. And it's people kind of putting together the different things that Ted Lasso has said in the show to come to the conclusion that Ted believes that Meghan Markle is God. And so this is just like, he's just like, whatever race you are, whatever sexual orientation you are, like, what, like, as long as you accept people and treat people with respect and you help people show up for others and most importantly, show up for themselves, then like, everything else is just the bonus level. And it's just so wholesome and so beautiful. And it takes the reason that it's done so well is that it, like, a lot of the quotes or a lot of the scenes start off in that same way that we've seen so many times, feeding into all of these stereotypes, and then just takes such a wholesome 180 turn.
That's so cute.
This is probably one of the most wholesome shows I've ever watched. It's engaging. It's funny. It's well written. And if you feel like you are disconnected from or becoming disconnected from your humanity or your community, watch it and then fucking tell me you don't feel better.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
It's on Apple TV, you said?
It's on Apple TV. Okay.
Dope.
It's on Apple TV.
Me gusta. Oh my goodness.
And the soundtrack is incredible. Like, it's just such a good show. But yeah, Ted Lasso thinks that Meghan Markle is God.
I mean, yeah.
He's just like, as soon as he gets there into the locker room and it's like a Premier League football team, so you know these guys are getting paid like baseball money.
Yeah.
Like crazy money. And there's so many egos and there's so, like, if you're a footballer in London, that's like the apex of society. And he like brings in a poster board and with marker writes the word believe and then crookedly tapes it on top of the doorway of his office. And he's like, we gotta believe. And it's just like so unassuming and so wholesome. And he just like so slowly like warms the hearts of all of these like jaded Londoners. Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm going to check that out. That sounds amazing.
I highly recommend.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Dope.
I'm so excited to talk next week about two other badass women.
I am.
Wrap up International Women's History Month.
Heck yeah. I'm very excited.
I want to encourage our listeners to check out our website where we have all of our show notes. We also have, I recently wrote a post.
Yes, you did.
To comment on the Sarah Everard situation, what happened, and kind of share my experience being a girl in the world. And so head over and read that. And if you ever want to talk, share your experience, or just, you know, need someone to listen or someone to talk to, reach out to us, DM us, like,
please.
That's
do.
What we're here for. And if you feel so inclined, your support really, really, really does help us so much. So please head to our Patreon. Patreon.com/thepeonypodcast. It's also in the show notes for this episode. And please throw us any amount that you can to support because we really appreciate it.
Yeah. And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at thepeonypodcast.com. So you can reach out to us and DM us there if you have any feedback, questions, concerns, memes, etc.
Oh, please. Yes. All the memes. We're on TikTok too.
Oh, yeah.
Send us TikToks.
Oh, please. I love them. Yeah, I think that's it. All right.
That's it.
Great. Bye.
Bye.